Last week was the first year in this topic of marriage issues in general. Last week we spoke about the mitzvah to marry, a man's mitzvah to marry, a woman's mitzvah to marry, perhaps situations where there is no mitzvah to marry. That was our conversation last week. I actually noticed that the shiur from last week is already online, so if you missed it, you can in fact get it online. What I'd like to talk about with you tonight is the second topic here, which is how do I go about fulfilling the mitzvah to have children? If you remember last week, we noted that the first mitzvah in the Torah is the mitzvah pru urevu. Pru urevu means be fruitful and multiply, right? In other words, populate the earth, have children. And if you'll see in Shulchan Aruch, it says in Se'if Vav, the third source over here, just because we always go out of order, the third source says that Noldulo Zachar Unikeva, once you have a boy and a girl, or the second source will start Sif Hey, Kevin Shiyesh Lo Adam Zachar Unikeva, Kiye Mitzvah Periyav Arivya. Right, if you have a son and a daughter, you fulfill the mitzvah of Periyav Arivya, v'hu, providing that the child himself is able to have children. V'hu shelo yeh haben saris, o hanekeva ailonis, providing that the son is not a saris. A saris is a male who's incapable of having children, and the female is not an ailonis, who's a woman who's incapable of having children. In other words, you have to produce a son and a daughter who themselves are capable of producing children. Okay? So if I have a son and a daughter, and the son and the daughter can't produce children, I do not get the mitzvah of Pru Urevu. Now the Cholkas Mecholkek and the Beis Shmuel, the major Mefarshim, comment that, okay, so I need a son and a daughter who are capable of producing children, right? But if they themselves can't produce children, I don't get the mitzvah. What about if my son can produce children, but he marries a woman who can't produce children? Or what about if my son can produce children but doesn't marry? Do I still get in the mitzvah? So the answer is yes. The answer is yes. Why that is true requires a lot of explanation, but we'll leave it for now. It's not our topic. Okay? What we want to talk about tonight is there alternative ways of fulfilling Pru Urevu? And then we'll also talk about the other topic that we have on this sheet, the mamzer. In other words, it says in Shulchan Aruch that in order to get the mitzvah Pru Urevu, I need a son and a daughter. End discussion, simple, right? Well, Shulchan Aruch also tells us, and this is a Gemara in Yevamos on Daf Samach Gimel Medbeis, the Gemara says, Misha Chashka Nafsho Batorah, someone who loves Torah. No? My students always say, I love Torah. I think that some people have like a little T-shirt and they walk around, I love Torah or something. No? It's like, so let's say you really love Torah, like Ben Azai, Keben Azai Tomer, all the time. V'nidbak ba kol yamav, and you are stuck to Torah your entire life. V'lo nasa isha, and you never marry. Ein b'yado avon, that is not a sin at all. V'ho shelo yehe yitzur mitgaber alav, providing that your desires aren't getting the most of you. Obviously, you're not doing anyone, there's no mitzvah involved if you are living in lust, so to speak, right? So if you do not, you're not overcome by desires, so if you learn Torah your entire life, you love Torah like Ben Azza, you fulfill the mitzvah on a certain level. Yes? What? Does that apply to a woman? So perhaps, again, whatever the obligation that women have, which is what we spoke about last week, women might not technically have Pru Urevu in terms of the obligation, but they might have a kiyum, they have a fulfillment of the mitzvah when they have children, or women have some other mitzvah to marry and populate the world, just the mitzvah of Sheves, or women have a general mitzvah to help the husband in his mitzvah of marriage, and they get part of that mitzvah. We spoke about last week how the Yisrael, the non-Kohen who receives a bracha, also gets the mitzvah of duchening, on a certain level, no? Because, did we speak about this last week? Yeah, okay, fine. So, whatever the obligation that a woman has, it could be she also fulfills the mitzvah through Torah, on a certain level. Again, even though women technically don't have the same obligation in the study of Torah, but certainly they fulfill a mitzvah when they study. Right? The mitzvah of Torah also, the obligation is primarily for men. Obligation is raised for men, not for women, but they do get a mitzvah when they stay. Yeah.
Didn't say he got the mitzvah.
Okay. Oh. So now what you are saying is like this. All it says in Shulchan Aruch is that if you don't marry, you do not have an aveira. If you love Torah and you don't marry, you don't have an aveira. You're not sinning. Right? I am interpreting it to mean, based on what Rabbi Soloveitchik said, this is found in the book Nefesh Harav on page 255, 256, that the reason why I don't have a sin is because I am fulfilling the mitzvah of Purifu by studying the Torah on a certain level. That's what I'm suggesting. However, one could suggest alternatively that no, I do not get a mitzvah, but there is a general concept in halacha called osek b'mitzvah patur min ha-mitzvah. Now, that when I'm engaged in doing a particular mitzvah, I don't have to do another mitzvah. Right? Let's say, for example, I have a lost article at home. No? I find your blanket outside. And when I find your blanket, the halacha is I can't just leave the blanket folded up in my closet all the time, because then the blanket will get all, I don't know, bugs will get to it or something, right? So what I'm supposed to do is every little while, I'm supposed to take out the blanket and shake it out, no? Take care of the blanket. Let's say at the time when I'm shaking out the blanket, a poor person comes, knocks on the door and says, can you spare a dime? Right? Do I have to give the poor person money? No. Because of my principle of osek b'mitzvah patur min ha-mitzvah, right? My principle that because I'm doing one mitzvah, I don't have to do another. I'm patur, I'm exempt from doing the other mitzvah. So one could have said that the idea here is that because I am engaged in Torah study, I'm patur, I'm exempt from the mitzvah of marrying. One could have said it that way, right? However, Rabbi Soloveitchik preferred the other way, the other formulation. The formulation that the Gemara has as follows. The Gemara says that Hamelamed es ben chavero Torah, if I teach my friend Torah, or ben chavero literally mean my friend's son Torah, Ma'alelav ha-kasuv ki'ilu yilado. The Torah treats it as if I gave birth to him, as if I begat him.
Begat him.
Thank you. Right? So if I teach you Torah as if I begatted, whatever. You.
Had begotten.
Begotten.
As if I had begotten.
Okay. I failed eighth grade. The point.
This is King James English, man.
But the point is that when I teach Torah, it's on a certain level as if I am. It's as if I am raised. It's as if you become my child, right? Banecha, elu talmidecha, no? Vilimadtem osam es b'nechem. I teach Torah to the Torah. We say this in Shema. Teach it to your sons. Well, my son doesn't mean my son, right? Now I have two of them, but my son means my students. Why? Because by teaching Torah to someone, they become like my children. Ibn Ezra writes on the Pasuk, Ela toldos Yitzchak ben Avraham, Avraham holides Yitzchak. These are the generations of Yitzchak, the son of Avraham. Then the Pasuk repeats, Avraham had Yitzchak. Says Ibn Ezra, it means Yitzchak is the biological son of Avraham. That's one element. And there's a second element of Avraham holides Yitzchak, that Avraham raised Yitzchak, Avraham taught Yitzchak Torah, Avraham molded Yitzchak into his progeny, not just his biological son. Okay? So that is the second element here. Now, Rabbi Soloveitchik's explanation that by teach Torah to you, you become like my son, is actually an idea that is mentioned in many. The Chofetz Chaim, right? The Chofetz Chaim writes as follows. Let's say a person doesn't have children. What should that person do? A person, unfortunately, doesn't have children, so what should the person do? So the Chofetz Chaim says there are two options. One thing that you should do is that you should study a lot of Torah and try to write works of Torah, because that way it's as if you are producing children in that sense. The second thing the Chofetz Chaim suggests, and we'll talk about this in a moment, is adoption. In other words, if a person does not have children, there is some fulfillment of the mitzvah of Prut Revu by either teaching Torah or through adoption. Now that's important, no? You see, The mitzvah Pur Ravu is an interesting mitzvah, because Pur Ravu was really formulated in the Torah before there was a Jewish people. Now God says to Adam, well, first God says to the animals, etc., and God says to Adam to go and be fruitful, multiply, and populate the world. So this is not a Jewish commandment, but the commandment is given again at Sinai, and then it becomes Jewish. So what's the difference between the Pur Ravu for the entire world and the Pur Ravu for Jews? It could be that the difference is in this regard, that for the entire world, the mitzvah Pur Ravu means populate the planet. It's a biological commandment. For Jews, there are two tracks. There is populating the planet, and there is also spreading the values. There are two different tracks of fulfilling Pur Ravu, Rav Soloveitchik said, right? Either through populating the world, right? That's the same mitzvah that non-Jews have. Or just by teaching Torah, that also is a way of... It's also a way of fulfilling the mitzvah of Pur Ravu. Now, I should just point... Yeah. Actually, you should do your point first, because my point will go...
I was just going to observe that in the first source there, it doesn't actually specifically say that Ben Azai taught Torah.
It doesn't say Ben Azai, but we know Ben Azai taught Torah. Because Ben Azai is a Tana in the Mishnah, right? So we know he taught Torah. It could be, right, Rabbi Soloveitchik was saying that it's not only through learning Torah, it's through teaching Torah specifically, because you need... Okay.
But wouldn't
there
be a little bit of your
question? Yes. But the fact that the Gemara says, ben chaverto kilu yilado, that line in the Gemara, Sanhedrin daf yotes, seems to imply this idea. Fine. Now, it happens that we don't have people like Ben Azai anymore. The Ritva writes here in Yevamos, on the third, fourth source, whatever, the Ritva quotes, Ma e'esa shenav shechashka v'tor, Ben Azai said, what can I do? I love Torah. He quotes that the Rambam says that you're pata from Peri of Arivya, etc. Okay, very nice. By the way, if you read the Ritva's presentation of it, it sounds like that this is an okay method. It's an acceptable thing to do, to not marry. The Taz and other Mefarshim in Shulchan Aruch say that you should not do it. It's not really acceptable to not marry, but okay, fine. That's point one. Then he quotes a Tosos that we don't have. Ava b'Tosos kasu she'im b'daros halolo mishia yachol liyos ki ben Azai afilu inyon zeh. We do not have anyone like Ben Azai today. In other words, don't do this. Right? Don't say, well, I'm not going to marry because I'm going to be studying Torah. This is not... Right? No one's really ever asked me that question, I have to admit. I've been in Mount Sinai now for like in my third year. No one has ever asked the question, I don't want to marry. I don't know why. But the fact is, you can't do it because the Ritva says... What? Now, what is interesting is that Shulchan Aruch quotes this halacha, no? In Shulchan Aruch, it does say that if you're like Ben Azai, you don't have an Aveira. It would sound like Shulchan Aruch is against the Ritva. The Ritva would say this Shulchan Aruch is the book of laws for today. And it says, well, if you love studying Torah so much, then you're not in violation of anything, right? The Ritva says, it doesn't apply anymore. Shulchan Aruch does not seem to follow the Ritva, for whatever that's worth. Yes?
It seems like Ben Azai is a very exceptional case. Don't try this at home.
Yeah.
Who are you to think that you're on Ben Azai's level?
Absolutely.
Especially when you're 18, you don't really know what you're talking about.
Right. Now, what is interesting, though, is that we do use this on a certain level. The technical halacha is that men should get married around the age of 18. No? Right? Shmoneh Esrei L'chuppah. So how come... we don't. Rumor has it that there are men in our communities over the age of 18 who are still not married. Rumor has it. I'm not sure, right? So now, how did this happen?
Right?
So the answer probably is that we are relying on this Ben Azai idea to a certain extent, right? That we're relying on it in terms of delaying the performance of the mitzvah. Now, what delaying the mitzvah of marriage can be done for a few reasons. Either because you're studying Torah, or because the mitzvah to have children is not only to have children, we'll mention in a few minutes, but the mitzvah is really to raise the children. Right? So now, if a person is incapable of raising children. Why not? Because I don't have my college degree. And since I don't have my college degree, I don't have a job. And because I don't have a job and I don't have a college degree, I can't support a wife and I certainly can't support kids. I can't support anything. I can't get my out of paper bag, right? So in that situation, right? We know these guys, right? So in that situation, right, there's no mitzvah. The mitzvah is not just to have children. That's something that we'll talk about later. The mitzvah is to have children and to keep them around, to support them. So if I'm incapable of doing the mitzvah, so I can't do it. And that's why in our communities we don't get married. Again, nobody. Right? Again, maybe in some Hasidic communities still, they get married by 18, but it's really not, it's not practiced.
Get engaged by 18. Boys get engaged at 18 and then learn for a year and then get married when they're 19.
Wow. Okay. I mean, by the, and even 18, you should know, is a stretch, because technically, every mitzvah in the Torah, right, a male is obligated in at the age of 13, right? So 18 itself is like a strange delay of the mitzvah in order to prepare you to be able to support your wife and your kids, etc. Right? That's where 18 comes in, right? But we extend it beyond that. Okay, so now, the next issue I want to address is the question of adoption. Is adoption a fulfillment of pre-rivu on a certain level? So the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin, that same daf, Amar Rabbi Yehoshua, right? V'chi michal yolado v'halo meiraf yolado. The Gemara says that, no, michal meiraf yolado, michal gidlo, lefikach nikre yashomo l'lamedcha, sheko ha-megado yasom besoch beso, mala alav ha-kosev ki'ilu yolado. If a person raises an orphan in their home, it's as if they begat, begat, whatever the term is, fine. Now, so if you raise an orphan, it's as if you gave birth to the child. That is the halacha. That is interesting also, because this itself leads us in the direction of what we're saying before, that the mitzvah of having children is not just to biologically have children, but to invest the time, the effort, to actually raise the kids. Right? What did Barack Obama have a whole pitch for, that fatherhood isn't just to produce? He had some nice expression about this, but it's... You know, I also couldn't. I was thinking as I was walking over here, as I tried to remember it, I just can't. But the fact is that the mitzvah is to, right, to be a father, to be a mother, isn't just to produce an offspring. It is to raise them. Right? It's so much so, the Gemara says, that even if I didn't biologically produce the child, but I raised them, that also is considered as if, right, I gave birth to them. It's as if I get the mitzvah per rivu. Now, this idea that, yeah?
Just pointing out that since this is in the context of women.
This is in the context of women, which is...
I wonder whether this could necessarily, whether halakhic inferences could be made.
Right. All the proofs in the Gemara are in the context of women. That is interesting. The Chochmas Shlomo on Se'if Aleph and Shulchan Aruch entertains the idea that, well, he says that he thinks it should be true for both men and women. He writes, Nistapakti, he has a question whether it's a full kiyum of pur-revu or it's a partial kiyum. Right? Is it a full fulfillment of having children, men and women, or a partial? Now, he phrases the question in the way of when the Gemara uses this expression, ki'ilu. Right? The Gemara sometimes says that if I do such and such, it's ki'ilu. It's as if I'm over devil desire. It's as if I... whatever. So, Dilla is... if as ifs, whatever, do those expressions mean that they're really the same or not? So the Chochmas Shlomo points out that he thinks there's a machlokas between the Prisha and the Taz. He develops this whole idea. But the fact is that we see that there is an element of raising children and that is a fulfillment of Puruvu. This is important, halacha lamasa, A, because, you know, adopting children is a preferred method for people who, for whatever the reason, can't have children. Now, by the way, today, and we'll speak about this next week a little bit, with modern technology, thank God, because it is becoming rarer and rarer to really be incapable of having children. We today do have the ability medically to, in the overwhelming majority of cases, it could be it's very expensive, but in the overwhelming majority of cases, it is possible to have children. It's becoming more and more rare to actually be impossible having children. But even if it would be, right, or for whatever the reason, so then there is adoption. Now, what does this mean about somebody who is not married? trying to adopt children?
To adopt them?
What does it mean for that? In other words, right? Maybe we could say that maybe a person could get some mitzvah of having children by adopting. Now, that's a very hard question to answer. It's a hard question to answer because there have been cases of this in a whole host of communities. It's a hard question to answer because in terms of the social impact of single parents raising children, that could be very difficult. It's also difficult for the following reason. Because in certain cases, let's say it like this. Adopting children as a fulfillment of pru'uruvu leads to the halachic outcome, for example, that the adopted child can take the name of the adoptive parent. Halachically, we will call the child up to the Torah as so-and-so, the son of the adoptive parent. I actually brought here an article that Rav Schechter wrote on adoption in Jewish law. His father, Rav Melech Schechter, was very involved in issues of adoption. Also, the consensus of Poskim is that we do allow an adoptive child to be called to the Torah as Yankel, the son of the adoptive father, Shmerel. Right? But if the father is a Kohen, the son will not be a Kohen.
What if the single parent adoption is usually a woman who's the person?
Right.
Do they call him up like by her father's name or what?
So in these situations, these are unclear cases. In Hilchos Gittin, we assume sometimes you have a person like Yoav ben Tsruya. So how did Yoav ben Tsruya? How come he's called by his mother's name when everyone else in Tanakh is called by the father's name? No. So there's the explanation is something along the lines of these types of cases. That for whatever reason, his father wasn't around, and he was called by the mother's name. Sometimes we do call by... That's a more complicated question. I honestly forgot to look into it. In advance, I'd have to look into it in terms of whether you call them by the grandparents or not. But the fact is, an adopted child, we will call to the Torah by the adoptive father's name based on this idea that's as if the adoptive father becomes the father of this child. Similarly, Rav Soloveitchik used to paskin, and Diane Ehrenberg from Tel Aviv paskin this way, that when the, and my cousins did this, I have some cousins that, whatever, one of my uncles died young, and then my aunt married someone else, and they were adopted. So when I called him my uncle always, because as long as I was alive, he was my uncle. But he was not the parent of my cousins. So when he passed away, they all sat Shiva for him, because the halacha is that we consider an adoptive parent, like the real parent of the child. Now, the real issue that comes up with adoption is something that we once spoke about before in the Shi'urim. In the Sefer Otzar HaPoskim, which is the classic work on Eben HaEzer, where he quotes all of the different poskim, so after the second volume of Otzar HaPoskim came out, there was a discussion of adoption, so the Lubavitcher Rebbe said that I want to write a letter to this important work, Otzar HaPoskim. And he writes, you know what, you're discussing issues of adoption, but I just want to tell you that in many cases you really shouldn't adopt children, or he says it's usher to adopt children, because it'll create a prohibition of yichud. Remember, a man can't be secluded with a woman. A woman can't be secluded with a man, right? Unless they are biologically related. So the Lubavitcher Rebbe said that you really should not adopt children, because if you adopt children, you're going to inevitably end up violating the prohibition of yichud. So what happened when Lubavitchers wanted to adopt children? They'd go to the Rebbe and they'd say, Rebbe, I want to adopt a child. So the Rebbe would always say, you know what, there's a big Talmud Chacham up in Washington Heights on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday named Rabbi Soloveitchik. Go and visit him, ask him the question. Right? Because Rav Soloveitchik was makel on the Isser of Yichud with adoptive parents and their children. The Tzitz Eliezer also is makel on this. Again, this has a lot to do with, it's not only Yichud, it's hugging and kissing, it's all of those prohibitions that are related to the possibility that maybe you'll have a relationship with the person. All of those prohibitions are relaxed, says the Tzitz Eliezer, and Rav Soloveitchik didn't formulate it exactly this way, because since you're raising the child as your own child, so you care about the child like it's yours. So there's no concern that you might violate some Right, prohibition. Yeah.
For adoption, you only get the mitzvah through who? You won't get the mitzvah of the Shevis.
Right, you don't get the mitzvah of the Shevis. It's an interesting, right? Because I didn't populate the earth. The earth was populated by the biological parents, but I get the mitzvah of Puruvu because I'm raising the child. Right, that's the interesting idea here, absolutely. But I also see from this idea of adoption that the mitzvah is raising children as much as the mitzvah is having the children. Yeah.
What about the common case people would adopt the non-Jewish children and convert them?
You adopt a non-Jewish child and then you convert. Still, there could be a prohibition of yichud because you also get a mitzvah pervu. The interesting thing is the Gemara does say that non-Jews who have children and then they convert to Judaism have the mitzvah pervu. That's the whole topic that that's machlokes Rabbi Yochanan Mishlokish in the Gemara. That's the whole topic that maybe we'll discuss a different evening. But the idea is that the mitzvah applies to non-Jews also, and right, this child was came into the world. There's a mitzvah peripheral. Absolutely, I think so. Fine. Now, hi, Skylar.
Remember reading something about that? Some rabbis say that it's actually preferable to adopt non-Jewish.
Yes. Yeah, so there is a discussion. Is it preferable to adopt a non-Jewish child, or is it preferable to adopt a Jewish child? So, most assume that it's preferable to adopt a non-Jewish child. And the rationale is that when you adopt a Jewish child, today it's becoming less of a concern, because today the in thing is to tell the child that they're adopted, and the child can find out, like, who the parents were and who the siblings are, etc. But the Gemara has a prohibition that if you have a person you just pick up on the street, that person has difficulty getting married because there's a concern that maybe he'll be marrying his sister, maybe she'll be marrying her brother, right? Which is forbidden. So to avoid those issues, if you adopt a Jewish child, there might be that concern. You adopt a non-Jewish child, so since the halacha is that once you convert, you lose all of your family relationships beforehand, so then...
I'm not making a joke. I don't.
So,
are they supposed to be adopted by non-Jews?
Oh, God forbid. That would be very bad. So, Jewish children who don't have parents, again, if I have a choice to adopt a Jew or adopt a non-Jew, I adopt a non-Jewish child. A child who unfortunately doesn't have parents should be raised by somebody else, but you should tell them who they are and who their siblings are, etc. But if you just go through an adoption agency, and the old practice used to be not to tell the kid who anything about the parents, right, and anything about the siblings, so then, right, that was the old-fashioned practice. Yeah.
Let me get this straight. Say there are Jewish children out there, excuse me, who need to be adopted.
Right.
If all the Jewish people say that they would rather adopt non-Jewish kids for these sort of offbeat, ironic reasons, who's going to adopt those Jewish kids?
Yes, I think that...
That's like nuts. I mean, I know of a couple
I think that's
of
what David was asking before. But I think the idea is that, no,
adopt
you can adopt a Jewish child. Just tell them that you're adopted and tell them, by the way, you don't have to give them all the information.
Right.
It is a good idea. The psychologists today, my understanding is that today the psychologists think it is a good idea to advise the child and to tell them as much as you can about their background. That's the general feeling, but let me take a few other questions. Yeah.
I was going to add on to that question, but is it also like the mitzvah to take care of the yatom?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So you're taking care of a yasom. The only thing is, make sure that you take care of the yasom in a way that the yasom won't potentially end up marrying his sister.
Okay.
That's the basic issue. Yeah.
And there's also issues of mamzerin, and there's worries too, especially nowadays. Any child that's coming from secular parents adopting them out, they're going to do a conversion anyway just to be certain that the child's Jewish, that there may be doubt if the mother maybe can't prove it, or if
right.
the mother doesn't have contact, or the mother didn't provide
proof to the
adoption.
Yeah, today adoption is much more complicated than it used to be. Again, we could probably spend the full session on adoption. It's a good topic, but not for tonight. So let's... So this is some of the issues that we wanted to discuss in terms of ways of fulfilling the mitzvah peruvu, either through studying Torah or through adopting. Rav Soloveitchik felt that these are basically one and the same. Rav Soloveitchik felt that he made like this Talmudic comparison. The Gemara says if I take raw wood, like plain boards, and I fashion it and I make a table, so even if I didn't own the boards, you owned the boards, but I make it into a table, turns out I own the table, because since I fashioned it, umen kone b'shvach kli, the workman acquires something by fashioning it. Right? So Rav Soloveitchik said that in some ways that is why a Rebbe, a teacher, and a parent, so to speak, have ownership rights, quote unquote, over the children. Again, it doesn't really mean ownership, although I wish my kids would believe that it did. But what it means is that since you are making them, you're forming their personalities, so that to a certain extent gives you a sense of ownership, for lack of a better term. We'll say it like that. Okay, let's move on. There is a question. The Ramah writes here at the end of Se'if Vav. Actually, let's do Se'if Vav for a second. Just one further proof to this idea. We're trying to suggest from the idea of adoption that the mitzvah is not only having children, the mitzvah is to raise the children, the ongoing relationship. So it says in Shulchan Aruch, "No dolo zachar in the keva umesu v'hinichu banim." If I have a son and a daughter, then they die. So, but they leave over children, then I get the mitzvah pru revu. However, if they die and they do not leave over children, they don't get the mitzvah peruvu. If a person, Nebuch, has a son and a daughter and then they die, so he lost his mitzvah peruvu. He had the mitzvah beforehand, he fulfilled the obligation, then when the children die, Nebuch, unfortunately, it's terrible, so then you lose the mitzvah. That's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. Now, what does that mean? That's very strange, no? Is there any other mitzvah in the Torah that I had the mitzvah and then I lost it? Right? The Gemara actually in Avodah Zarah discusses, let's say I did the mitzvah of Kisui Hadam, I cover the blood after I shecht the animal, I shecht the bird, and then I cover the blood, and then the wind comes, and the wind, Gemara in Sukkah, Gemara in Avodah Zarah, the wind knocks the dust away. Do I lose my mitzvah in that case? Right? In most cases... What?
It knocks away.
Again?
It knocks...
The wind knocks the dirt off, so now the blood is uncovered again. And I'm supposed to cover the blood after I shecht the bird, and then I did it, and then the wind knocks it away. Do I lose my mitzvah? It's very hard to assume that once I did a mitzvah, I lose it. Right? Here, I did a mitzvah.
Do you lose it with the bird?
So, we generally assume that you don't. There is a discussion in the Gemara about zichoy yetzel mitzvah, so mitzvah machlokas in the Gemara. Generally, we assume that you don't lose the mitzvah. Now, so how come over here I do lose the mitzvah? What does this mean? So this means, yeah.
Well, okay. I'm thinking not of, God forbid, all of this, but, you know, you're 60 years old and your 35-year-old kids get, God forbid, killed in a car accident. Thinking of the scenario where you have young children and they die. If, like, they're 3 and 5, God help them. Okay. So the idea that you now no longer have the mitzvah may act as a spur for you to go on
and have
and try
more.
To have some more. I mean, that's the
It could be, but it's so hard to understand. I had
this
a mitzvah.
The result, not necessarily the mitzvah itself, the result.
So apparently, what you see from this halacha also is that the mitzvah is not biologically having children. The mitzvah is raising them, keeping them around. No, Rabbi Yosef Engel is an interesting application. The halacha is that children have to eat on Yom Kippur, right? Why do they have to eat on Yom Kippur? I don't eat on Yom Kippur. Right? Even when I spend the full Yom Kippur not in shul in the hospital, I don't eat. Right? They kept telling me, like, eat. I'm like, no, I can't. It's Yom Kippur. Right? So, my kids eat on Yom Kippur. Why? Because they have to stay alive, no? So Rabbi Yosef Engel has an interesting idea. He wants to say that if a kid has to eat on Yom Kippur, the parents should feed the kid himself. Because by feeding the kid, that's a mitzvah of pru revu. Right? By keeping the kid alive, I am maintaining my mitzvah of having children stay alive. Right? It's a very interesting application, but again, we see the same type of idea that the mitzvah is to have children who remain alive. Now, the last line here in Se'if Vav is a topic that at first will seem unrelated, then hopefully in 5 minutes or so we'll try to bring it back to what we've been discussing. The Rama writes, Haga, the last line of Sifav, Haya haben mamzer ocherish, if you have a child who's an illegitimate child, let's say a person has a child through one of his relatives, a case of incest, that's the easiest way to produce a mamzer, right? An illegitimate child, ocherish, or the child is a deaf mute, or a shota, or a katan, right? Now that word katan is very strange. If I have a child who's a katan.
Yes.
Right? So that's a mistake. The Beis Shmuel writes that you have to take the word katan out, because every child who you will have will presumably be a katan, correct? Eh? Or a katana. So if I have a child who is a mams or a chersh, a katan, so the Ramah says I fulfill the mitzvah peripheral. This is based on the Yerushalmi. That the Yerushalmi, in the section the mamzer, and I lowercase mamzer because we don't want to make them like, uppercase. Right? So it says that if I have a child, Mishishal ben mikom akom, I have a child in any sort of child, potus ashes of min hayibum, the halacha of yibum doesn't apply any child, etc. And it's considered benohu lechol davar. The Gemara then says, the Yerushalmi says, Rabbi Oven boy, benohu lechol davar, filo peri of arivya, velo shanya, or velo shanye. Right? So the Yerushalmi sounds like, at first glance, that even for Puruvu, it's your child. And that is the source, and this is quoted by the Rashba, the Ritva, the Ramban, all of the Rishonim and Yevamos and Avchav Beis, they quote the idea that if you have a mamzer, you fulfill Puruvu. Now, there's a few problems here, and the Radvaz points these out in his Tshuva. The Radvaz, by the way, was the Rebbe of the Arizal. Now, the Arizal, like the father of Kabbalah, so Ari died at very young. He died at age 34, no? The Arizal lived in Sfat. For most of his life that we know of. And the Arizal had a Rebbe, had two Rebbeim. One of his Rebbes was Reb Chaim Vital. His other Rebbe was the Radvaz. The Radvaz moved to Israel when he was 80 years old. He retired. And he retired. He had been the rabbi in Egypt, in Mitzrayim. And then he moved to Israel just as retirement. And he decided to pick a nice, small retirement community where no one lives. Right, so he chose Tzfat. Turns out his bad luck, right, at that time in Tzfat, all of these young whippersnapper Kabbalists were moving into town. So this 80-year-old Radvaz, who just wanted an easy, nice, simple retirement, now has all these little kids floating around. Right? And then the Radvaz turned out that he lived to the age of 110, in tradition. Right? So the Radvaz ended up with that's how he has like thousands and thousands of tshuvas, because he lived forever. So the Radvaz had a student, the Arizal. Now, the Radvaz, basically, in his tshuva, I give you the tshuva, he is bothered by two things here. Thing number one that the Radvaz is bothered by is that the Yerushalmi doesn't really say that you get the mitzvah per revu. The Yerushalmi says, Rabbi Oven Boy. Boy is Yerushalmi expression if he asks a question. His question is, do I get the mitzvah per revu with the mamzer? So it's unclear from the Yerushalmi that you get the mitzvah, point one. Point two, says the Radvaz, is that he would contend that you don't get the mitzvah because it should be what we call a mitzvah haba ba'aveira. No? The halacha is if I, let's say, steal your esrog and I make a bracha on it.
Or your wood to make a table.
Or your wood to make a table, but I don't know too many mitzvahs in making a table, right? But if I steal your esrog, okay. Right? We'll leave it like this. I steal your esrog, I steal your lulav, so I don't get my mitzvah. Right? Because that's a mitzvah habab avira. A mitzvah that came about via an avira, that's not a mitzvah. So the question is, so if I have a child who's a mamzer, that means that the child came about through an illicit relationship, no?
Yes.
Yeah, right, big time. So now, if that's the case, that should be the classic case of mitzvah haba ba'aveira. So the Radvaz asks, how come there is a mitzvah of pru urufu with a mamzer, and therefore the Radvaz basically disagrees with the Ramah. He says, you know what, he thinks of a halacha, that there is no mitzvah pru urufu with a mamzer. There is a massive literature on this topic of mitzvah haba ba'aveira and the mamzer. Some suggest that maybe the case of the mamzer, that it's your son, is not talking about a case where there's an illicit relationship, maybe it's a case that a mamzer has another child, so that's a fulfillment of peruvu. Yeah, Orly?
I was going to ask if that was the case of the second generation mamzer.
Right, so maybe that's the case. That's a very easy answer. That's what the Minchas Chinuch.
He's still a mamzer.
A mamzer is permitted to marry a giyores. A mamzer is permitted to marry a mamzeres. There's a lot of people a mamzer can marry.
Mamzer marries a convert, is a female convert. Yes.
The child is still a mamzer.
Why would a woman want to convert into this system if her kids are going to be stigmatized like that?
Why would she want to marry the mamzer?
Yeah, nice guy.
Well, like these are hard. Again, these are not easy questions to answer. But the fact is, right? The fact is that maybe there's no avera involved. That's what Orly is suggesting. That's what the Minchas Chinuch entertains. Happens that the Ramban, the way the Ramban presents it. In Yevamos and Daf Chaf Beis, Ramban says clearly it's talking about a case of incest. And the child is still a fulfillment of Prut Revu, you get the mitzvah. So what?
And simply, if the mitzvah is not just to have a child.
So the answer that the Minchas Chinuch wants to give, ultimately, again, there's a whole literature, the Ma'arit al-Ghazi, and everybody talks about this, but the Minchas Chinuch's answer is what we've been discussing until now. Now, the mitzvah per revu, just like in terms of the adoption, and in terms of keeping the children alive, if the mitzvah per revu is not the ma'isa mitzvah, it's not the act, the mitzvah per revu is having children. Right? So, this person is alive. You see, now, that's not an Aveira. Mitzvah Bab Aveira means that the Aveira and the Mitzvah are coming simultaneously. I pick up the Esrog, right? The Gizela, the stealing, that act of stealing, and the Mitzvah Lulav is happening at the same time. Over here, the Aveira happened years ago, and the Mitzvah is keeping the child alive after, right? So it's not Mitzvah Bab Aveira. That is what the Minchas Chinuch suggests. Now again, this is something that we could flesh out for a while in terms of Mitzvah Habab Aveira. There's a lot to discuss, but we'll just leave the Minchas Chinuch. The Pri Yitzchak also says this in Simin Mem Beis. They all say some ideas along the same thing. Just one last interesting source here. Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik used to say that Sefer Hasidim was this weird blip in Jewish history. That we have no idea how the Sefer Hasidim came about. We don't know. We don't understand anything. The Sefer Hasidim has the following line. Sefer Hasidim says that when Adam HaRishon was created, so all of the angels wanted to bow down to Adam HaRishon. The angels wanted to consider Adam HaRishon like he's a god. But God said, you know what, Adam HaRishon, I don't want you to be thought of as a god. Therefore, Adam HaRishon, I'm going to minimize you. So God began to like chop off parts of Adam HaRishon. And he threw those parts of Adam HaRishon throughout the entire world. And whenever a child is born, what really happens is that we are picking up those parts of Adam HaRishon, and we are fulfilling, we're bringing him back to what, I don't understand any of this, if you do, please explain to me. Right? That's what the Sefer Hasidim says. So now, the Sefer Hasidim then goes on and he says, well, therefore, right, this is only if the child who's born is a child who's a rightful heir to Adam HaRishon. But the child is born who's a mamzer, so that child is going to not survive. The child will die. That's what it says in Sefer Hasidim. Okay? That a mamzer...
But that Adam
HaRishon
was before Jewish and before Mamzer.
Yeah, there wasn't Mamzer, there wouldn't
have been another generation. I don't know. Again, so the Beishmo quotes this Sefer Hasidim, okay? Look at the bottom source. Sefer Hasidim is in Tav Kuf, Kozav, Deloki and Puruvu Kishaholam Mamzer, that you don't get a Mitzvah Puruvu when you have a Mamzer, Dekaimalon, because we paskin Mamzer Eino Chai. The Sefer Hasidim writes on Mamzer like a Trefa. A Trefa is this person who has like an internal injury to one of his organs, and the trefa won't live, and the mamzer also won't live. That's what the Sefer Hasidim says. So, but, I mean, there are many mamzerim who live all the time, so what does this mean? So, the Beis Shmuel says, it could be that the Sefer Hasidim is referring to a mamzer that no one knows is a mamzer. That person will die. But if you know he's a mamzer, he won't die. Again?
A closet mamzer.
Right. So a closet mamzer will die. That's what he says. Now, what this means is, I have no idea, but...
It seems that it's conveniently impossible to disprove.
Correct. Right, that's true. I don't know what this means. It's just an interesting source, also in terms of the mitzvah pru'urvu with a mamzer. Again... Halachically, the Rambam says you do fulfill the mitzvah, but the Radvaz disagrees, and we try to answer the question, the mitzvah hababa aveira. So again, this is some of what we discussed tonight in terms of the mitzvah of Pruruvu. There's much more to say, but thank you for coming. So next week, I think I want to talk about IVF. And there's a whole bunch of the topic that we began tonight in terms of single people adopting. We'll talk about that next week in contact with single people with IVF. That's a very hot issue, and there's a lot more to say.